This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. The National Black Prosecutors Association has chosen Detroit for its summer conference. The group wants to draw attention to a house in West Detroit, where nearly 80 years ago the history of U.S. civil rights was changed. Detroit Public Radio's Celeste Headley reports.
When Dr. Oshin Sweet bought this brown and green house on Garland and Charlevoix, it seemed perfect for his growing family. The spacious two-story home was close to his office, mere blocks away from his in-laws, and right across the street from an elementary school. There was only one problem. Sweet was black, and in 1925, the large wooden houses on this tree-lined street were filled exclusively with white families. Racial tensions were high in Detroit during the Jazz Age. The Motor City was a boomtown, and housing was scarce. During the summer of 1925, four black families tried to move into white neighborhoods and were driven out. Some were literally dragged from their homes. Historian Kevin Boyle says Oshin Sweet was facing the most important decision of his life.
When the trouble started, he had a simple choice. You back down. You say, white mobs can do what they want. Or you stand up for the principle that you've got a right to live wherever you want.
When Dr. Sweet moved into the house on Garland, he asked several friends and family members to stay with him and help protect his home. He also bought some guns. On only his second night in the house, a mob gathered on the street and all hell broke loose. When the smoke cleared, a white man had been shot dead. Dr. Sweet and the 10 others in the house were charged with murder. But author Phyllis Vine says Oshin Sweet had two miraculous strokes of luck. First, the young judge chosen for the trial was Frank Murphy, who later became governor of Michigan, then U.S. Attorney General, and finally a justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. But in 1925, Vine says he was relatively unknown, and this was his first entry into the political arena.
Frank Murphy stood up to the courts when nobody else would have taken this case, and he said, I am going to make sure these 11 defendants get a fair trial.
Sweet's second bit of luck came when Clarence Darrow agreed to defend him. Darrow had just finished arguing the Scopes Monkey trial and was itching to take a case challenging the idea of white supremacy. Darrow would later say that the Sweet trial was his best and most eloquently argued case, and his arguments succeeded. After 46 hours of deliberation, the 12 white men on the jury deadlocked, and the defendants walked free. That outcome was a major victory, says Bruce Brown, president of the National Black Prosecutors Association. Brown says the Sweet case was the first to show that a black man has the right to live where he likes and defend his home. What's even more surprising, Brown says, is that the case has been all but forgotten.
When you think of the landmark civil rights cases, I mean, this case should clearly be named among them.
Oshin Sweet's name may soon emerge from obscurity, though. This summer, the state of Michigan will install a historical marker in front of his house on Garland Street. 76-year-old Ruby Baxter has lived in Sweet's former home for nearly half a century. Looking out the wide front window across the wooden porch that once separated Oshin Sweet from an angry mob, she gazes at the spot on her small front lawn where the marker will eventually stand.
I was just living, I think, to see that this plaque be put here for him, in honor of him, because he was a good doctor. He was my husband's doctor, and then he done this for the people.
Historian Kevin Boyle says the Sweet case demonstrates that the struggle for civil rights began long before Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat on a bus. But he thinks perhaps people don't want to remember the Sweet trial because there was no real happy ending.
The very thing that the Sweet sacrificed, risked everything to address, that Clarence Darrow fought for, that the NAACP fought for, the Sweets didn't get. Cities were segregated. Detroit now is the most segregated city in America. And so the Sweet story in the end is a story of risk and sacrifice and victory, but the underlying principle, they lose.
In fact, Dr. Sweet's personal story ended tragically. His brother and wife contracted tuberculosis while in jail, both dying of the disease, but not before Gladys gave it to her 14-month-old daughter, who died a month after the trial ended. Dr. Oshin Sweet, suffering terribly from arthritis, took his own life in 1960. Boyle says Sweet's story has been overlooked for too long. He hopes Oshin Sweet will now get the recognition he deserved during his lifetime. The state of Michigan will place a historical marker in front of Sweet's home on Garland Street in late July. For NPR News, I'm Celeste Headlee in Detroit.